I had a lot of ambivalence around being a mother, and I think looking back on why, it was all justified. And part of it is that, you know, as particularly working women, we are expected to work as though we don't have children and expected to parent as though we don't have jobs. And I just felt like, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I can be the type of mom I want to be, but also be the type of physician I want to be. And I still have those doubts in my mind.
Welcome to Moms of Medicine. I'm your host, Allie Trainer, and that was Dr. Huma Farid. I'm so excited to get the chance to share this conversation with you today. I learned so much from Dr. Farid, hearing about the decision to have children after not wanting to be a mom for the longest time, having only a 5-week maternity leave when she was an OBGYN chief resident, not having the time to go to her 6-week postpartum visit, surviving the COVID pandemic in a 2-physician parent household with young kids, going part-time for 3 years after having her second child, and then finding that that was a really good, valuable decision for her. And she was the first person to go part-time in her department in about 20 years. There's so much more to this conversation. Huma shares so much wisdom and joy in the process of being both a mom and a physician, and I'm so grateful to be able to share this conversation with you today.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so excited to chat with you. And if you could just, for people listening, start off by telling us your name, what you do for work, and a little bit about your life outside of the hospital.
Sure. Yeah. And thanks for having me. My name is Huma Farid. I'm an OBGYN, a generalist OBGYN at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. I'm also the associate program director for the residency. And outside of work, I live in the suburbs of Boston with my husband, my 2 kids, ages 8 and 6, and our cat. I enjoy baking and cooking and love riding my bike in the summer just for fun.
I love that. And I wanted to plug another one of your interests too. You're a fellow podcaster, yeah, which is super exciting. And if you could just share kind of the name of your podcast and maybe where people could find it if they're interested in listening.
Oh yeah, thanks. The name of the podcast is very tongue-in-cheek. It's called At the Other End of the Speculum.
Which I love.
I'm at the other end.
Yeah.
And the podcast is really focused on faculty development. And yes, it's, you know, for OBGYNs by an OBGYN, but it's really applicable to anyone in academic medicine. And I try to make the topics as broad as possible. So we've talked about everything from negotiating to failures to, you know, figuring out how to find a mentor. So that's coming up soon. So hopefully it'll be up, posted up soon, but you can find it on Buzzsprout and Apple Podcasts.
Awesome. All right. And you and I were connected by multiple people who kept telling you to meet me and me to meet you. And we finally met a while back. We had a Zoom call just to chat, and it was a lot of fun. So I'm pumped to be able to chat with you and record it. But I think one of the reasons people connect us is we have mutual interest in education, mutual interest in podcasts. But then what I wanted to hear more about is that you are crushing it at work while raising 2 kids, and you shared some truly insane motherhood, parenthood in the pandemic stories with me, which I would love to jump into again a little bit today. But before we get there, I know some people kind of like to start at the beginning with your journey to motherhood. I don't know if that's something you want to share, or if you feel like, no, let's jump right into the pandemic stuff, because that was really, really impactful for me.
Sure. I think I'd actually like to share my motherhood journey, because for the longest time, I actually didn't want to be a mom. And my husband and I almost didn't get married because I told him I didn't want to have any kids. Wow. And for him, that was non-negotiable. He's like, I want to have children. And I said to him, like, I really am not sure. I don't think I want to have kids. And, you know, if that's the case, maybe we should go our separate ways. And we compromised and decided we were going to have one. And that one was like way in the future, right? So we ended up getting married. And I really resisted for a really long time. And at one point, I don't know what happened, but I was about to turn 30 and I saw one of my colleagues deliver a baby. And it was just all so, it seemed so amazing. And now looking back on it, I'm like, lies, lies, lies. Like, she made it seem like it was like rainbows and kittens and puppies and so wonderful. Everything was amazing. And she was a third year OBGYN resident when she had her baby. And then I decided, okay, maybe I am ready. Like, I started spending more time with her. I started seeing more babies around. And obviously, it's what I do every single day at work. And I talked to my husband and I was like, okay, I think I'm going to be ready. I like went to Geneva, interned at the WHO, and then came back and was like, okay, I'm ready. Like I've done all the things that I want to do. And we decided to try. And I thought it was going to take me a really long time. And surprisingly, it did not. But I think when you're an OBGYN, you think like, oh, worst case scenario, like I'm going to have infertility. And it's going to take me forever. And you know, all those things. And it did not. We were really lucky in that way, but a little bit unlucky because I had planned on having a baby at the end of chief year. And instead I had a baby at the beginning of chief year. My husband was in his last year of internal medicine residency and was applying for fellowship. And so it was just a crazy time. And I remember I had my son in September and my husband obviously got no parental leave and then had to go for a interview in Pittsburgh for his fellowship. And I was left with this like 1 or 2 week old baby. And I ended up calling one of my very good friends who I'd known since med school. And I was like, I just need somebody to come watch the baby so I can take a shower. Because as a first time parent, I was just so terrified of leaving him alone. And so she came and she was amazing and brought me food. I had a lot of ambivalence around being a mother. And I think looking back on why, it was all justified. And part of it is that, you know, as particularly working women, we are expected to work as though we don't have children and expected to parent as though we don't have jobs. And I felt that around me, and I saw that among my other friends who had children before me, or just like looking at my attendings who were trying to do everything. And I just felt like, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I can be the type of mom I want to be, but also be the type of physician I want to be. And I still have those doubts in my mind often. And I wonder, you know, what are my kids going to think about me when they're older? Like, are they going to look back on their childhood and say, man, my mom worked all the time and was never home? Or, you know, I don't know. And I think that's the tricky part about parenting, that you don't really know what how your actions are going to impact your children long-term. And that's something I think about a lot. And I think that ambivalence around becoming a mother has helped me think more deeply about like, also, what do I want? Right. I think we give up so much of ourselves, particularly when my children were little. I don't think I did anything other than like go to work and take care of my kids. And now they're older, not that much older, but
yeah, I was like, they're not that old.
But I very firmly believe in independence for children. So
yeah,
like, you know, you're going to make your own beds. You're going to pick out your clothes. You're going to do all the things that you need to do that, you know, pack your snacks, pack your backpacks. And it's these small things of forcing them to be independent in these small ways, I think gives me back a little bit of time for myself. And also I have sort of created a space where I do one thing for myself every single day. And that one thing is often just exercising. And I joke, I'm like, if you want me to live longer, leave me alone to exercise.
Hey, that's important though. I love that. There's so many things I wanted to, I was like taking little notes as you were talking, because there's so many things I want to ask you more about. The first, I just have to comment, I think it's so funny that your compromise is one child, as if like one child is not overwhelming and yeah, like still takes up, still makes you a parent. So I thought, I just had to say, I thought that was so funny.
Well, the irony, obviously now I have two children. The irony is that I had one and I loved it. And I was like, yeah, one. And my husband was like, oh no, I'm good now.
Oh my gosh. That is funny. Three.
And I was like, no, you told me you wanted three. I want another one at least. He was like, no way. And
so funny.
I managed to slowly convince him.
Yeah. Well, I'm also kind of speaking of that conversation with your husband, I'm so curious when it was in your life that you were having this conversation with him about him wanting kids and you not wanting kids, because like as an OBGYN who takes care of women having children all the time, was this before you started your training as an OBGYN, kind of in the middle? It's so fascinating to me to meet an OBGYN who did not want children.
Yeah. It was actually before. It was when I was in med school. So we got married my last year of medical school, and we were obviously having this conversation at the very end of my second year. And then like sort of when we got, it was coming to the point where like we were going to get engaged or not engaged. And that was my third year of med school. And that in the fall, I think was when we had that conversation, and then took a break, not a very long one, but just like took a break. And I had to think about, you know, did I want to do this or not? And at that time, the irony is that I was not interested in OBGYN yet. I was thinking about psychiatry. And I can tell you, life with a psychiatrist is very different than life with an OBGYN. And I think that was what pushed my husband to not want to have any more kids, because he, by the time we had our first kid, right? Like I was obviously in training, and he realized how much more work it is to have a baby when your wife is actually, you know, has 10 weeks of night shift and is working 80 plus hours a week. And I think that made him realize, like, wow, that's a lot of work. And I don't know if I can do this again.
Sorry, I'm like trying to formulate all my thoughts, because again, there's a lot of things I want to ask you about, but I'm curious too. When you had said that part of your hesitancy of wanting to have kids was knowing that the career balance would be challenging, did that hesitancy just come from what you witnessed as a medical student and what you saw, or did you have, you know, advisors in your life who were saying, hey, think hard about this because it's not easy? Like, where did that come from? Because I'll be honest, I knew it would be difficult to have kids and be a physician, but I think I was more that like type A, I've muscled my way through everything kind of thing. Like, yeah, it'll be hard, but I can do it. And so I'm curious how you got to the point of being a little bit more thoughtful and being like, it's hard, I don't know if I want to do it, which is okay.
I think it was probably really like just college and beyond. Like, I just knew that children were really hard. So I have to, funny story, but I grew up in a very big family. Like it's just my brother and I, my mom has six brothers and a sister, and they all lived in Jersey, and all my cousins and I grew up together. And I was often the older one in the middle cousins group. And so I babysat them a lot. Like, I was in charge of them a lot. And if you babysat my cousins, you probably would never want children again either. Experience made me realize, like, man, that's really, really hard. And, you know, I just saw how hard people worked and how difficult it was to balance that. But none of my advisors actually ever said to me, like, don't have a family if you want to consider a career in OBGYN. I did have an advisor tell me not to do OBGYN unless it was the only thing that I loved. Because I think, you know, she did have kids and it was really hard. And I think she wanted me to think about that. But I never really had anybody explicitly say, don't have kids, it's too hard. But I just saw how hard it was for people, right? And just like talking to others, and it's a challenge and it remains a challenge. Mm.
And it sounds like, though, after you had your first child, it was of course hard, but your experience was a little bit different, where for you, it was affirming. And you were like, this is great, let's do it again. And for your husband, it was more like, okay, this is great, but I think we're good. So what do you think led you both to those different feelings around it? Do you think it was job related, personality related, or kind of how do you think you two flipped?
Yeah, I think it was definitely personality related. For me, I had just never experienced that much joy and love until I had my son, right? I think when you have your child, whether that child is adopted or whether that, you know, child you give birth to, I think there is just something that happens that for me was just this indescribable joy and love and incredible feeling of gratitude that I could be in this little human's life. And it also, as an OBGYN, brought me closer to my patients. And I remember talking to my patients about their baby showers. And obviously I was very pregnant and they were like, when is your baby shower? And, you know, there was this joy in going through pregnancy together and this community of other moms. Like, you become a mom and all of a sudden you're in this community and it's just this acceptance, you know, like you just look at the other mom when your kid is having a meltdown and you're like, yeah, I know, been there, you know, we've all been there. And I think that joy, that sense of love, that I also love babies, obviously, like I'm an OBGYN.
I'm glad you like
babies. I still love babies. Like, any friend who has a baby, I'm like, I just want to come over and hold your baby. I will hold your baby at night. Like, that's how much I love babies. And I think it really, like, I just never really held a baby like that before, right? My cousins were younger than me, but not that much younger that I would be unsupervised holding a baby. So it was just really this really joyful time in my life. And even though it was really hard because I had him as a chief resident, it was still just this indescribable joy. And I think for my husband, he'd never babysat. He'd never really been around kids. He's the youngest in his family. And I don't think he ever really understood what it meant to have responsibility of a child. And so for him, he was like, whoa, this is so much work. He thought they slept for 20 hours a day consecutively. And I was like, no.
God, that's hilarious.
Sleep rotation. He's like, no, they don't sleep consecutively.
Yeah.
So I just thought he would be sleeping all the time. I was like, nope, that's not what happens. So I think there was a lot of misconceptions there that, you know, he just never interacted with babies. And I think that is pretty common for men, honestly. Like,
I will say
interact with babies.
Totally. And I'm laughing at your husband, but like I fell into the same thing. Honestly, I remember my husband and I took some like baby class, and they had this mnemonic called EASY, where it was like E is for eat, A is for awake, S is for sleep, and then Y is for you time when they're sleeping. And so we thought we would just put him to sleep. He would lay in the bassinet for 2 hours and it would be great. We didn't put him down for a nap for the first 3 months of his life because he wouldn't sleep otherwise. And in hindsight, it was like really sweet. And we do cherish those moments, but we had no clue. We thought we were going to like put him down for 2 hours and we were going to go exercise, watch TV, like, and we had no clue.
Yeah.
So I feel for your husband.
Yeah. It was not easy. I don't know. Yeah. That's terrible, Monic.
Yeah. Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. Well, especially easy. It's not easy. Yeah. Like,
not easy. None of it is easy.
No. I also wrote down, I was like kind of laughing, but not laughing about when you were, you know, talking about you had your baby and you're like, and obviously my husband didn't have leave, which is so funny because, well, again, funny, not funny, because it's obvious because it happens all the time, but it's so horrible too. So I would love for you to share just a little bit more about what that was like for you and what, you know, what it was like for your husband going back so soon.
Yeah, it was terrible, honestly. And I didn't realize it at the time. I was just in the thick of it, but I only had 5 weeks off as a resident. And like, I was lucky, right? I had an uncomplicated normal vaginal delivery and I was able to go back at 5 weeks, but I can't imagine how it would have been had I had complications or needed, you know, more recovery time. And then he, I think, had like 1 or 2 days off and went back.
Wow. And
luckily, I was really lucky that I had great friends who could come over and just help support me. I had prepped a little bit and, you know, had frozen food. And then my family came, his family came. And then my mom moved in with us for a year to help with the baby, because between two resident schedules, there was just no way that we could A, afford a nanny, or B, like even have normal hours for a nanny or daycare. And so that was really the only way I got through it. Even then, it was incredibly challenging. And I remember going to, I don't think I actually went to my postpartum visit, because this is the bad part about being an OBGYN, right? Like, my friend delivered me and never went to see my OB afterwards. Just bad, all bad. But I went to take my son to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician looked at me and said, like, how are you doing? Because I'm sure I look like death. And I looked at her and said, you know, I'm a resident. I'm already back at work and he's here for his like 6 week visit. How do you think I'm doing? And she really was the only person who asked me how I was doing and if I needed help. And I think in that moment, I probably did need help and really was just uncertain how to get it, who to ask. And it was a really tough year. It was a really tough year. And then the sad part is when we had our second child, I was in attending. And yet again, my husband was still in training. He was a fellow at that point. And I remember going into labor and he was on call that night. And I said to him, like, and we delivered at his hospital where he was working. And I said, you know, you need to call your co-fellows and just tell them to cover this call shift. He's like, well, the baby's not born yet and I could probably go see the patient. And I was like,
oh my God.
No, you need to call them. They will cover for you. They have to cover for you. Like, we could have this baby anytime. And
oh
so,
my gosh.
But, you know, he had like a week off and then went back to work, and I had to be fine with that. Like, he really not wanted a second baby. And I promised him that I would do all the nights for the baby because he just really hated getting up at night, and he was, you know, just in training. And so it was, and I was not in training and I had a 3 month maternity leave. So he just, I don't think, was able really to get any time off with the kids in the early stages. And I do think that made him feel a little bit less connected. Like, I don't know if he would say that, but I felt that way just as somebody who was perceiving all of this. I think it's really hard to feel as a husband to feel included when, you know, like your wife gives birth, your wife's exclusively breastfeeding. Really, there's very little that you can do when all a baby needs is food and a diaper. A diaper yeah. change is like the worst part of all of the above, right? Because the best part is like the snuggles that you get when you're breastfeeding, and the worst yeah. part is like dealing with the poop. So, I mean, he got the worst part of the things that the baby needed, and I ended up getting the best part of the things, right? And so I think that does make a difference in how much more you want to have another child.
Of course. No, I think there's, again, there's so much there. And I want to touch on all of it, but I think one of the first things you mentioned was that you only had a 5-week maternity leave when you were a chief resident. And it's horrifying to think about. And I'm curious, was that because of kind of hospital or state policies, or was that your program specific? Because it's confusing to me that as an OBGYN, you would still fall victim to the abhorrently short maternity leaves.
So it has now changed, but this was an American Board of OBGYN policy. So my program wow. had to follow it. And wow. the policy, and I don't know why this is, and again, you know, it's interesting because as an OBGYN, we should be thinking about these things very thoughtfully, but it was specifically for chief residents, for residents who are graduating that year. They could not take more than 6 weeks off during the entire year, including vacation and leave. Wow. And I mean, what's happening in your last year of residency? A lot of people are having babies, right? Like we've yeah. delayed having children for so long. And at some point, like you had to get started. And yet this was an American Board of OBGYN policy that they would not certify you to take the written exam unless you complied with this leave policy. Or to be fair, my program did offer that I could extend training, but I mean, we've all been there, right? Like the thought of extending training to me was like somebody poke my eyeballs out because totally. I can't do this anymore.
No, that's like sinful that the policy was so short. And the thing too is, sure, you have the option to extend training, but that has huge financial implications. Yeah. As you mentioned, like you can't afford childcare on 2 resident salaries. So then to say, oh, if you want a reasonable maternity leave, you have to extend your training, that has huge financial implications. So it's not so easy, even though you also mentioned the idea of actually staying a resident longer is also yeah. horrible.
yeah. So, I mean, the program tried. I just think that there was this policy and they just couldn't, you can't circumvent it. And so luckily, thankfully, that policy has now changed. But it was, I would say it really was not conducive for women of reproductive age. So that's why I ended up going back at 5 weeks.
That sounds so hard. And I think it highlights too, you as an OBGYN resident and all the knowledge you have, you even couldn't make it to your 6-week postpartum visit. And so the only person you have to talk to check in on you was your son's pediatrician, which is like, you know, thank goodness for this person, but that is shocking and just frankly, so sad.
Yeah. It really is. And things are better now, but specifically in Massachusetts, they're better, not nationwide. And there's a lot of work to be done. Yeah,
totally. And I think that brings too to the point of you mentioning, you know, it was a little bit harder for your husband to bond with the baby and then have that desire for the second child. Cause if you only had 1 day off or 1 or 2 days off, and then also this pressure in medicine to feel like you can't call for coverage when your wife's in labor. Like I'm giving your husband the benefit of the doubt. I think it's probably not that he didn't want to be there, but you feel like, oh my gosh, I can't make my colleagues cover me because yeah. they're stretched so thin. And I just like would feel horrible to do that. And it's, I don't know, another part of the culture we got to work
right,
on.
Right, right, right. You know, like, he did feel badly that he was going to have to ask somebody to step in for him. And that's hard, right? It's late at night and you're making sudden changes in coverage plans.
Totally. I also wanted to ask you a little bit more if you remember, I know it's a lot of times some of the stuff in the beginning gets a little hazy, but if you can remember kind of you and your husband thinking through how you were going to arrange childcare for your first son, because I myself know the challenges of arranging childcare. I know I shared with you before we started recording that our nanny texted us on Friday that she was no longer going to work for us starting Monday. So I can imagine having your mother live with you was super helpful, but I know that's not an easy decision. And I'm sure there's a lot behind that too. So if you don't mind sharing a little bit more about that decision and how that came about and how it worked for you guys.
Yeah. I mean, I want to preface this by saying nothing is free, right? So my mom provided free childcare. It was monetarily free, but it was not free of many other things. And it was wonderful. I don't want to downplay all that she did. It was amazing to have somebody living with us, but it is really hard. I mean, when you have your first kid, it is like trial by fire. You have no idea what you're doing. I mean, I just help babies come out into the world and I have no idea what to do with them afterwards. Obviously now I do, but at that time it was like I distinctly remember we were going home and my son was delivered at MGH and we're going home and I'm like, that's it. You're going to let us go home. Like you don't have anything else.
Yeah.
You don't have to pass any tests. You don't have to tell us what to do. Like, yeah. And we went home and we decided that the 5 weeks of leave, I would just spend with my son and my mom wouldn't come until later. My mother-in-law came for a couple of weeks during my leave. And then my mom came. And that was a discussion we'd had prior to the baby being born. Obviously, we thought about, you know, can we afford a nanny? Can we afford daycare? And the answer was we definitely couldn't afford a nanny and we could afford daycare, but only, you know, not on our schedules. And so when my mom did come, it was great. But again, it's like stressful to have somebody in your apartment. Our place was small. It was not easily accessible. It was on the fourth floor without an elevator. And she was alone without her family for the first time ever, right? My dad would come for weekends, but she had her entire family in Jersey and she left them all to like come be with us. And I think that was really hard for her. And ultimately it was an amazing blessing for us, but there were times where it was extremely challenging. And I think, you know, I did 2.5 months of nights after he was born and a lot for he was exclusively again, like breastfed. And it's just a lot for people to handle a baby all night, every night for like 10 weeks.
That is amazing. And I can understand why your husband was worried about the nights with the second child. That is hard. Wow. Well, I'm grateful for you that you have such an amazing mom who was able to do that for you. But, you know, of course, there's a lot of emotions that are, I'm sure, wrapped up in asking someone to help. But it sounds like it worked out for you guys okay.
Yeah. But it's hard to ask for help. You know, it is really hard to say, like, I'm struggling, I need help.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I think I mentioned to you, my mother-in-law is coming up to stay with us to help us out for the month of August, which I'm so appreciative of. Shout out Marianne. She listens. But you feel so bad asking. And, you know, I'm sure your mom and my mother-in-law and my mom's helping out as well. They're happy to do it, but you feel bad because you know that it's them making a sacrifice and it's hard to ask for help.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. And so baby number two comes into the world. You're in attending, got 3 months of leave, which feels glorious. Maybe, I hope.
No, it was amazing. The second time around was so much better. It was so much better. And you know, the second time around, you were like, oh, I've done this before already. I know how to keep one alive.
Yeah.
And the easy part is a toddler. That's the challenging part.
Yes. Yeah. And so then remind me again, how old are your kids now?
They're 8 and 6.
8 and 6. Okay. And so then you have your two kids, you're an attending, your husband eventually graduates fellowship and he is an ID physician,
yes.
Correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then 2020 hits and you're a two physician family, you're working nights, your husband's in high demand with ID. How in the world did you two survive?
I mean, it was terrible. I never want to revisit, particularly that first wave of the pandemic, because for a couple of weeks, like literally, so we found out there was a state of emergency declared on March 12th. And that Friday, the next day, I had a full panel of patients. And I couldn't reschedule 20 patients, but yet my kids' daycare was closed. So I called up my friend who's amazing and who lives about 5-7 minutes away from us. And I said, hey, are you working tomorrow? Because she's a hospitalist. So she'll do like a week on, week off. And luckily, this was her week off. I was like, can you do me a really big favor? Can you take care of my kids? So I had never dropped my kids off to anyone's house before. And, you know, my kids were little, like 5 and 2.5. But her daughter was the same age as mine. And her son was a couple years older. And she was willing to do it. So I dropped the kids off with just like their lunch. It was like, here you go.
Yeah.
And I went to work. And we realized that weekend that like daycare was not going to reopen for at least 2 weeks. And so luckily, like work was amazing, and they allowed us to sort of flex our schedule. So I ended up taking a lot of overnight shifts on labor and delivery. Obviously, all of our surgical cases were canceled. And really what we were focusing on was like keeping labor and delivery running and having some face-to-face clinic time with our patients. And then I did that for a little bit. So like he would work from home and I'd be in clinic in the morning, like 1 or 2 days a week. And then I'd run back and he'd go into the hospital and then be there till who knows when. And then on my nights, I would just come home and he would leave to go to work and just try to keep these kids alive while I battled sleep. And I think my children watched, who had never watched TV before, they watched like entire seasons of shows.
Because that's amazing. So depleting. You had to. Yeah, no, you had to.
And you know, I was like surviving and like 1 or 2 hours of sleep a night. And we then ended up figuring out some babysitting with my colleagues' daughters, who's of course their school had been closed. They were amazing. They had babysat for us and had been like mother's helper while I was taking my oral boards a couple of years before then. And so the kids knew them well, and they were like our date night sitters. But you know, their parents were also physicians. Our house was a two physician household as well. And between like four of us, we had so many exposures to COVID that I just got really worried that, you know, I would either expose them to COVID or they would expose me to COVID. Or like just, I was just worried about the kids, honestly. And they were little too. And so we ended up saying, you know what, I think it's just not safe for us to mingle so much between like her, you know, the girl's husband, the girl's dad worked in the ICU. My colleague was obviously an OBGYN, my husband's ID. There's just like COVID everywhere. And then we tried to find a regular sitter and it was terrible. Like people found out what my husband did for a living. They were like, nope, we do not want to work in a family who's exposed to COVID daily. And honestly, like we're probably the safest because we have PPE, you know, he was extremely cautious, but people, like we asked four sitters before we found one who was willing to work for a two physician household. And when we found her, oh my God, she was a unicorn. She was amazing. Like I cannot say enough good things about her. My kids still talk about her. And she was the reason I was able to go back to work, because at one point I thought to myself, oh, we can't find childcare. I'm going to have to take furlough and just stay home with the kids. And I really didn't want to do that because I just, you know, I wanted to be out there taking care of patients, and I didn't want to have others in my department work more. And again, you know, same thing, like, you know, don't want to ask your colleagues to cover you. And so thank God we found her, and she was incredible. And she stayed with us for a year because their daycare was closed for 5 months. And then by the time things, you know, 2021, things started to open back up, their schools opened, my daughter was going to be in kindergarten. So it ended up working out better for us. But man, that year was really hard until we found our sitter.
That's so hard. And do you, I'm curious, because I know you had mentioned kind of a little bit of the pull between wanting to take care of your patients, but wanting to make sure your kids are okay, and feeling that tension of having to go to work, having to leave your kids, and vice versa. Have you talked to your kids at all about how that, I know they're still so young, but have they mentioned at all how that year was for them?
So it was really interesting. So my son became very anxious. He was 5. And, you know, unfortunately, like we also don't, maybe we should have done a better job. We didn't filter our conversations at home. And of course, like think people were panicked, right? It was a very, very stressful time. And we talked a lot about COVID. And I got early on in the pandemic, I had an exposure because at that point, remember they told us not to wear masks with patients?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, as an OB, I'm literally like, really, you know,
you were right in there.
I'm right in there. And my patient ended up calling me, I think the first week of the pandemic, saying, and she was an ED nurse. She was an ED nurse. And she said, you know, I have a fever. And I was like, oh, shoot. And she'd just been in clinic the day before. And we have no windows in our clinic room. They're tiny. And, you know, I was like, great, she has COVID. And I probably have COVID too. And she, obviously at that time, it took 5 days for a test to come back. And I said, you have to go to the hospital, because we had no idea, right, what to do with pregnant patients who had COVID at that point. And so we sent her into the hospital. And, you know, this was then I ended up being pulled from work. I couldn't take any more L&D shifts because at that point, nobody was getting tested unless you were febrile. Because again, the test took forever. So they're like, you just quarantine at home. And so my husband and I had to talk about, what do I do? Like, do I quarantine, or do I just like quarantine at home and mask at home? Like, what do I do? And ultimately we decided it was going to be really disruptive, especially because I had no symptoms, if I just left the house. Like the kids were really not going to do well. And at that point we didn't have a sitter. So I had to be childcare. I was like, great. You know, if I get it, everyone's going to get it.
That must have been such a hard decision at that time. Though,
so I did masks, and luckily, like I, not to my knowledge, I did not get COVID. My patient did fine. She did have COVID, but she did okay. And her baby did okay. But I think that experience was horrible for her because nobody would come to take care of her. You know, like we lived with the baby, and then postpartum, like people were really, really scared. And she had to be separated from the baby because at that point we didn't know anything. And it was just horrible for her. And she and I talked on the phone about this quite a bit, but it was really tough for the kids, for my son. My daughter had no idea what was happening, but my son saw us being anxious and developed a lot of anxiety and like never wanted to go outside without a mask on, like took hand washing very seriously. And then when school started, had a really tough year doing hybrid and being on Zoom. Like he hated it. He hated school. He just like hated that he couldn't see his friends. He was a very social kid who loved being out and about. And for the first time, he was stuck at home all day, every day. And I think it drove him bonkers that he couldn't do what he wanted to do. And so he had a really tough year emotionally. And so that was very hard to deal with. Like just the level of sadness. And it made me so angry because all that I heard was, kids are so resilient. Kids are so resilient. And here was my child really struggling and saying like, I am scared. I don't want you to leave the house. What if you get COVID and die? Like those are the questions he was asking.
That's heartbreaking.
And he became really anxious and we ended up like having to bring him to a therapist and, you know, people just sort of chalked it up to obviously like he sees you guys and you're stressed and like maybe that's part of it.
Oh gosh, that's so hard though.
He's fine now.
What did you do?
Yeah. But that was a really tough year. It was a really, really tough year. And I just got so upset every time somebody's like, children are so resilient. Like, yes, they're resilient, but they also are very intuitive and can pick up on our emotions.
And they're observant. They know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah. And he knew we were stressed and he became stressed as well.
That's so hard. And you said he's doing okay now though?
Yes, he's doing okay now.
Good. Okay. I remember too, when we were talking months ago, you shared some story with me and I'm trying to remember if it was during a pandemic or sometime afterwards where, you know, you felt this tension sometimes like having to leave your kids when you're pulled in on call and you're like, how are they going to perceive this? And you told me this adorable story. I can't remember. It was either your son or your daughter about how they told someone that, you know, what you were off to do. I don't know if I'm cueing you enough, if you remember the story.
So it was actually a couple of months ago. So I want to preface this with another story. And the story was that during the pandemic, obviously, like, you know, you just took phone calls and you tried to be as helpful as possible. And I remember being home with the kids one day and having still to answer a page and having to call a patient back. And I was in the middle of reading a book to my son and I said, hey, I have to stop. I need to call a patient back. And he looked at me and goes, why do you love your patients more than you love me? And it was so upsetting. It was so upsetting. Right. And I had obviously explained to him that I don't love them more, but that I do have a responsibility to them, just like I have a responsibility to him. But that's a really hard thing to hear as a mom, right? Who's trying to balance it all and clearly failing. So I worried a lot about that, but I then, a couple of months ago, was asked to cover a call shift sort of unexpectedly. And we'd already made plans with friends and we were going to go have dinner with our friends and both of our families. And so we'd already made that plan and I needed to take this call for a colleague. So I was happy to do it, but I had to leave dinner in the middle of dinner. And so I said goodbye to my kids and I was like, oh, they're going to be upset that I have to leave this dinner. And my daughter turned around to her friend and said, my mom is a doctor. She has to go help babies. That's why she's leaving. And the pride in her voice made me realize, and she was only 5 at the time, right? But the pride in her voice made me realize that they see me and they see what I'm doing. And they know that it's not me choosing my patients over them, but that it's me really providing a unique set of skills that only a select few people in the entire world have. And that is really special. And yes, I'm their only mom, but for many of my patients, I'm their only OBGYN as well. And I think trying to be there for both kids and patients is really hard. And I think that's the crux of a lot of my angst, but it's also really validating when my kids see me.
I love that story. It's so sweet. And I would just love to know now, several years into your career, into motherhood, having survived the pandemic, 5 weeks of maternity leave, what you would advise young Huma who was like, nope, not having kids, or someone in your position, what would you tell them now?
I would say go into it with eyes wide open, that your life will completely change and parts of you will disappear forever, right? Like, I used to travel a ton before I had kids. I was vastly more interesting than I am now, but I think that's okay. And you have to be ready for those parts of yourself to stay on a shelf for a little bit, right? Like, that travel is coming back now, and we're traveling in different ways. We're traveling as a family, but we still get to do really awesome things. And so I think just remembering that the changes in your life are not permanent, but they're there and they're temporary. And that ultimately what you gain is, for me in particular, like as an OBGYN, I really gained a deeper understanding and appreciation of my field, right? Because I'm pretty open with my patients and I share a lot about myself and my kids and our family. And so a lot of my patients know that I have kids, a lot of my patients, and I relate on that front. And so for me, that's brought this insight into my career that I don't know if I would have had if I had never been pregnant or had a baby. And so I think that that's been really wonderful for me and has deepened my understanding of the practicalities of being a parent. But I think also just the incredible joy and love that you receive from your kids and that you have for your kids, and the joy of watching them grow and try new things. And also just the joy of understanding that, like, you're never going to be the perfect parent, but that each day is a new day and your kids will understand. And I think just providing like that sense of being a good role model for my kids is really something that I don't think I thought about when I was younger. But I do think that my fears were not unfounded. It is very hard, but it's also very worth it, right? I think that it's one of the hardest and most difficult things that I've ever done. And, you know, we've done difficult things like med school and residency and training are not easy, but it's probably harder than everything combined.
I think that's all such beautiful reflection and advice. And I just wanted to highlight that last part too, because I think I did not go into it eyes wide open at all. I was like, I can do med school, I can do residency. Like, sure, this will be hard in a different way, but like, I got it. And we're fine. He's alive and healthy and well, but oh my God, it was a lot harder and so much better than I could have imagined.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I do want to be respectful of your time. I know we're coming up towards the end of our time here, but if you have any other reflections or thoughts kind of floating around up there that you want to share with people listening.
Yeah, I think there's one thing we didn't touch on, which I think is really important. And that's after I had my second child, I did end up going part-time for almost 3 years. And I think that was really valuable to me. And I would highly encourage people to think about the arc of their career, because for me, it felt like a failure to admit I need to go part-time because I can't do, you know, 60-hour work week as an attending and have two small children. And again, we didn't have a nanny. We did daycare, and that was a choice that we made, but it was really hard to do all those things and still work full-time. And nobody in my department had gone part-time in like 20 plus years.
Wow.
And so I felt like I couldn't handle it. And, you know, I wasn't cut out for academic medicine. And those were a lot of the negative thoughts I had when I went part-time. But I feel like that time with my children really gave me such joy. And they're never going to remember it, but I remember it. And I remember like just getting my feet back under myself and just thinking, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to reshape my career. And so that those few years are very small interval in a career that's very long. And I think had I not had that break, I don't think I would have been where I am right now. Mm-hmm. I think I would have not been able to keep up, and I would have probably quit medicine altogether, or, you know, not be in academia or not really be in any leadership roles. But I think that break enabled me to sort of reprioritize and figure out what I actually wanted. And that was very valuable. And so I would say, remember that right now, things may seem like, oh, you know, I don't want to go part-time or I don't want to take a break, but sometimes that's what you need. And then you can just resume when you're ready. And I think when I came back to working full-time, I was very engaged and really ready to like jump back into academic medicine and kickstart my career. And I had like fire lit under me. Like, I want to get promoted. I want to publish. I want to do more medical education work. And I was able to do all of that because that fire was reignited rather than being tamped down.
That is so impressive to me that nobody had gone part-time in 20 years. And you were like, no, I need to do this for my family. How did you have that conviction and make that happen and blaze that trail?
I didn't.
Oh,
my chair.
I take it back. I'm not
with Yadi.
I'm just kidding.
Amazing. Yeah. I came back from maternity leave, right? And I came back to 3 24-hour shifts in like 3 weeks and, or 2.5 weeks. And it was terrible. It was terrible. I had this newborn and she was not taking a bottle. And it was, my husband was really stressed. He was like, what am I going to do at nighttime? It's like, she's going to have to learn or she's going to have to like wait it out. But I came back to a lot of work and my chair asked me at the end of the month, how are you doing? And she's just an incredible human being. And I started crying like right in the hall. I still remember exactly where I was. And I just started bawling. And she was like, okay, so what can I do to help? I was like, I don't know. I don't know what I need. She's like, you need to go part-time. It's like, no, I can't go part-time. I resisted. And my chair looks at me. She goes, no, you need to go part-time. And I said, I can't do that. Like, who's going to take the call shifts? Who's going to see the patients? She said to me, we'll figure it out. And I said, okay, maybe we'll start in January. She's like, you're not going to make it till January. And it was the end of August. And I probably wouldn't have made it till January. And she said, no, we need to do this now. And she, the next, very next month, made me part-time. And it was the best decision I could have made. And really kudos to her for recognizing that if you want longevity, you have to meet people where they are, right? Like, you have to get them through a really tough time. And that ensures longevity of their career. Because I don't think I would be in academic medicine if I had not had that time to sort of decompress.
I'm so impressed by your boss of having that foresight. And I hope there's more people out there like her.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I'm so glad you're excited now and sounds like doing a lot of good work.
No, it's been wonderful.
And that's it for today. Thank you once again so much for listening all the way to the end. And if you liked today's episode, please share, like, subscribe, leave a rating or a review to help other people find the podcast. And tune in again for more content soon.